with Nelson. South gets out.
And we're missing one tonight. Hybrid meeting protocols. Please silence all electronic devices during the meeting. If you're attending in person, please refrain from conversations with other attendees or the staff during the meeting. If you wish to provide general public comments, we have three methods available. First, for virtual attendees, raise your hand at the appropriate time using the raise your hand button at the bottom of the Zoom window. Your name will be called and your microphone will be muted. Second, attendees can signal by pressing star 9 on their keypad. Their first four digits of the phone number will be called, and the last four digits of the phone number will be called, and you will be connected. You may need to dial star 6 to unmute your phone. Third, written comments and testimony can be submitted to the staff and emailed to cjewel@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. of the day prior to the meeting. Please indicate the date of the meeting for the comments, your name, the agenda item, and the subject you're addressing. Submitted comments will be entered into the record at the appropriate time. For all speakers, please state your name and general area in which you live. Comments are normally limited to 2 minutes for general public comments and 3 minutes for public hearing. These times may be adjusted by the staff. Next is adopting of the agenda.
I move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
Move and seconded for adopting the agenda as presented. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? The agenda is adopted. We will skip the adoption of the minutes. We won't have any minutes for the previous two meetings. And they'll be picked up next time. That brings us to the first period of general comments. Do we have anybody online that wants to comment? I don't see any.
We've got some virtual attendees.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Relative to the presentation of staff on rural Kitsap, I would like to have them address how, A, they're working toward deregulation of some of the requirements we don't need, and also what community groups they're working with and how their input makes a difference in the year of the rural in terms of regulations. In other words, if somebody submits a comment, is that just a comment or does it call for a change in a proposal? Too often it seems to me we only get to comment, but we don't get any changes in the text or the construct of an ordinance. So I'd like those two things addressed when staff makes their presentation. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Any other comments online? Seeing none, are there any comments in the room? Seeing none, we'll close the first general comment period. That brings us to the briefing on the year of the rural.
I'll just wait for my presentation. Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for having me this evening to present. This is a briefing, and my name is Heather Cleveland. I'm a long-range planner with Department of Community Development with Kitsap County. And tonight's briefing is, again, about the Year of the Rural. We've covered most of this stuff, so I was looking to consolidate a bit and maybe perhaps give a little bit more details and preview for what's coming next. But we'll talk about the project overview again, the Growth Management Act, the 2024 Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan, which this update is a part of, an overview of our outreach, an outline of the Rural and Resource Lands chapter, potential code updates, discussing those and where our focus areas are, reclassification requests, and what's next. So an overview of the project, we had a charter and community engagement plan that was prepared and presented to the Board of County Commissioners in December. Our deliverables include the Rural and Resource Lands chapter update, potential code updates, and the reclassification request recommendations. Outreach and engagement has been a continued effort, which I'll touch on some of the details in another slide. Outreach and engagement has continued to be an important part of our process for the Year of the Rural this year. We've done research and gap analysis, so research on best practices, reviewing latest plans that have been adopted, and looking to how can we ensure that where we need to be as Kitsap County, and then also continuing to do data analysis and mapping up until we publish our 60% draft on September 2nd. So the Growth Management Act, there's planning goals that we look to and follow. I've covered those in more detail. We have mandatory elements, which includes the rural element, and that's what the Rural and Resource Lands chapter is covering. There are three main land types. We have urban, rural, and resource lands. So this particular chapter and update is focused on the rural and resource lands. It's a tiered planning process, so it starts with the multi-county planning process. Well, it starts with the state, and then the multi-county planning process, and then the county-wide planning process, which includes collaboration with the other districts, and then our Kitsap County plan. And Kitsap County history, so pre-GMA, we have a significant amount of parcels that are smaller, for example, in the rural area that are smaller than the 5 acres. We have urban services in rural areas. We have significantly developed shorelines. We have undesignated resource lands. For example, we do not have agricultural resource lands. And we still hear, and there's pushback for the status quo, the continued type of development that we see existing. And then the Growth Management Act passed in 1990. We had several invalid plans. Our first comprehensive plan was adopted in 1998. And then today in Kitsap County, we have our urban areas, known as our urban growth areas. We have our rural areas, and then our resource lands. So this is an outline of the 2024 comprehensive plan that was adopted on December 2nd in 2024. This is to illustrate that we are adding a new chapter, which will be between the land use chapter and the economic development chapter. A good amount of, maybe not all of it, but a percentage of the land use chapter where it discusses rural and landwards, that will be shifted to the rural and resource lands chapter. And another, just a reminder of the history of this, in 2012, that's the last time that we had this chapter separated. In 2016, it was woven into land use. It was woven into land use in 2024, but it was decided during that 2.5-year process that, once again, there needed to be a dedicated process and special attention paid to the rural and resource lands of Kitsap County. This is just a bit of a reminder. These are some snapshots from the comprehensive plan showing kind of the main point of the Growth Management Act, which is housing, accommodating, planning for housing, population, and employment. The table that shows the housing shows, which was a challenge for us and continues to be a challenge for folks across the state and the country for that matter, is the requirement for affordable housing. So that's divided into, you can see the income levels and where we haven't reached, and we'll be presenting on housing again along with human resources to talk about their efforts in affordable housing and what we have done with respect to development regulations. But you'll see in here, or I should acknowledge that multifamily housing isn't allowed in rural. So this, I just want to emphasize, when we're talking about housing and where that goes, it's kind of been opposite when it comes to looking at the rural and resource lands chapter. Similar, same goes with population. You look at rural, it says here 5,415. And if you look at our numbers from 2020 to 2024, we've already had several thousand, you know, growth in population. So that's on track to exceed what's projected here. So just something to note as we're looking, it's kind of a flip challenge when it comes to looking at the rural and resource lands. And then finally, employment. We have here the target for rural, just focusing on rural, that's 2,301. But also want to mention and acknowledge, and I can speak to this more later, but the buildable lands report and the land capacity analysis are not about the rural and resource lands. Those are done for the urban growth areas with the goal of accommodating these growth areas. What is left is what goes in the rural. So that's something that's been kind of a aha and an interesting challenge for us as we're looking at the rural and resource lands chapter. I'll also acknowledge too that a major focus of the rural and resource lands, according to the Growth Management Act, is rural character and not these numbers. So some of this is small, but I wanted to make sure to capture it. So this is a bit of an overview, high level, of our outreach. So we have review and summaries of the rural comp plan public comments. So that means we had four public comment periods throughout the 2024 comp plan 2.5 year process. We reviewed those and summarized those comments that were related to rural, and that's available on the project page. We also had two surveys. The first one was pretty broad and really focused on rural character, but gave us, it was, I would say, also a check-in to see, are we aligning with what we heard during the comp plan? And indeed, we are, and we did. And that was in February and March. And then we had our, what we called our survey 2.0, where we kind of really started to hone in more. And I will say for the survey 1.0, we had over 1,000 comments from the community. And then for the survey 2.0, we had much less, but I would say the questions were much more technical, talking about landmords and code and things like that. We had just over 100 comments there, and both of those are summarized on our project webpage and continue to be informative to the work that we do. We've also worked with a variety of folks along the way, be it interviews, presentations, or workshops. That includes an agricultural working group that was kicked off from the beginning of this. We received great feedback from them, and we will be meeting with them again in September through the end of this to continue to get feedback, have conversations. Kitsap County Child Care Task Force has been another important touch point for us. Child care was one of the priority, and I should say the focus areas for us under the rural and resource lands, and I'll talk about that a bit in a moment, where we think that's going to go. Kingston Rotary, another presentation there. We've had, you know, with respect to the reclassification request, we've had a lot of feedback from North Kitsap, so a presentation and engagement was done with Kingston Rotary. We have our tribal coordination meetings. Those were held every 2 weeks during the comp plan, but now they're held every month. And I provided an overview of the project early. I believe that was about February. Have met with some of the tribes individually, and then also we'll be presenting again the project, similar to what I'll present to you all, to the tribes in September for continued feedback and engagement. I know Mr. Palmer had mentioned at a previous meeting about the Kitsap Rural Business Coalition. I have met with them and continue to discuss with them, especially one of the particular topics that you will see that we're focusing on with respect to potential code updates. The Great Peninsula Conservancy has also been another, we've had multiple touch points with them. They've been part of our gap analysis with their conservancy plan. And so we've looked to what do they see as conservancy? How do they see it working? This is something that they do on a regular basis. This is what they do. So that's been another great, those have been great conversations and great connections for us. We've talked to a gravel pit owner as it relates to the mineral resource overlay. We've also, along with that, in another avenue, we've met with the Wisconsin DNR to talk about their updated maps that they published with respect to where our mineral resources are located. We've also talked to, for example, we have an internal review team and talked to our parks and forestry there. We've also talked to the Department of Emergency Management within Kitsap County. And then also, of course, we talk to our own internal departments. So current planning, we've discussed with them all along the way about our potential code updates and how this was impact them. They're the ones who hear things on the front line of what's happening, get the questions, get the friction. So that's been great to work with them, and we'll be continuing to work with them. We have a meeting with them this coming week to actually, here's what we're proposing. What are y'all's feedback on that? We had workshops in June. That was prompted by feedback from the Planning Commission, noting, hey, here are our touch points. Hey, could we have one more that to get some more feedback? And so we really received great feedback. We went to all three districts, had great conversations. A main part of those workshops were about real character and what that means to Kitsap County. So we are taking that to heart. Although the state does define rural character, what does it mean for Kitsap County, and what are those tensions? And you'll see coming out of that our proposed definition of that for rural character for Kitsap County. The Community Advisory Council, we had one presentation to the Suquamish CAC in September, and then we'll be doing the other three CACs in September. Sorry, did I just say, I meant June, if I said September, but June, we already had it with Suquamish, and then we'll be having it with the other three in September. And that's to, one, communicate about the project and where we're at with it, to present to it, but also to promote the opportunities for public comment for when the two hearings are going to be, the one with the Planning Commission and the one with the Board of County Commissioners. We really want to promote the opportunity for feedback, because when we talk about a 60% draft, there is opportunity for feedback, and I encourage folks to make the comments early, and also if they like something, to please say that too. So those will be coming in September, three of those. We'll be hosting an open house. Those will be in September during the public comment period. We have an open house scheduled for September 11th, and we'll have one hour of a presentation and then an in-person open house after that where folks can come and talk to us. We'll have some poster boards explaining it, again, encouraging people to submit their comments through public comment. And then we have the public comment period, so we'll be publishing this draft of our deliverables on September 2nd, and that's when our public comment period opens, and that will last until that Friday, October 3rd. And then finally, I mentioned we have those two opportunities for public testimony, so you all can hear what folks have to say about our deliverables. And here's just an example of a comment. This isn't one that I'm necessarily going to answer, but I really liked that it was asked. That's why this is important. And I'll also acknowledge, too, when folks ask the questions or they share their concerns, we can't fix all of them right now. This is a 20-year plan, but we can acknowledge them. And so this question was, and this was during the South Kitsap workshop. And the question was, forestry requires access to mills on site milling. What provisions are adding small scale industrial zoning to rural wooded? So that was the question, but I'll also add that this same thing came up with agriculture. And not only is it about, for example, farmland preservation, it's also about economic viability. So I am taking note of that, and I'm also taking note, and I'll also go back to the Great Peninsula Conservancy, and they talk about working lands as conserving lands. So all of that is noted. So this is an outline of our chapter. I've shared some of this before. This is currently a link to it and with more details. And this is this chapter is organized like the other chapters in the 2024 comp plan because it has to match that. But I will say we are looking to, when the Rural and Resource Lands chapter was its own chapter in 2012, and kind of looking to weave things in, but also keeping in mind what's relevant for today. So this is the outline of the chapter. Probably not much will change, I think, you know, with respect to this outline, again, because we have to flow with the rest of the 2024 comp plan, but this is what the outline will look like. And we are looking to restructure, and if you look at the 2024 comp plan now and the land use chapter, you'll see it's kind of small, but when you looked at the 2012, there was a lot of information, a lot of focus on it. In 2012, one of the biggest focus areas were dense areas and Lammerds. Well, ours is going to be a little bit different this year, and this is how we're looking to break it down with respect to headers, like the headers and how this is going to break down. So rural development, so that has been a really, that has been a hot topic for us. There's a lot of growth pressures. Some folks may be looking to get out of the timber industry and develop, so we want to acknowledge that. And also acknowledge where are those opportunities, what do we see looking forward for the next 20 years, and again, maybe not answering the question this year, but proposing of how can we analyze this further to help answer this question. Resource lands, of course, we'll have the inventory today and perhaps acknowledge whether that has gone up and down over the past however many years or decades. And what do we see going forward? I will acknowledge in the resource lands, we will have, it will be broken down in resource lands. It hasn't previously, that's why this is noteworthy. Agriculture will be under resource lands along with timber and mineral resources. And so we are looking into our work, the fact that we don't have agricultural zoning, we're looking to come up with some creative ways of, it might not go that far, but what can we do? Could it be an overlay? Could it be a designation? How can we acknowledge this? We're doing that analysis right now. So we'll have a resource land section. Rural business has been another focus area for the rural and resource lands, and I should say the year of the rural, in that how we've done it with kind of merging our resource lands and our rural lands, for example, rural wooded, that there are some limitations to the businesses that are there that we think that perhaps those barriers could be removed. And that, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment, child care, also known as daycare in our code, and events. Rural services and infrastructure. So this is another area where we will acknowledge, and this umbrella, I guess, stood out. One, it will exist no matter what, but the battery energy storage systems will be acknowledged here. But as you all heard from my colleague Jim Rogers, that is now going on its own kind of parallel path. And but we'll acknowledge it there, how things are changing and the demands for land that aren't necessarily tied to employment are changing. And how should we think more about that? And then finally, I'm looking forward to including a more robust rural environment section. The only reference to environment in the current land use is related to agriculture, and I think there are several other things that we can acknowledge with respect to rural, such as aquifer recharge areas, watersheds, wildlife habitat corridors that folks have brought to our attention that we want to acknowledge in this chapter. These are the potential code updates that we are actively evaluating. So agriculture, this has been mentioned earlier, the agriculture community have made several suggestions to us of perhaps updates to the agriculture code. So we're considering all of those. I'm not saying that all of those will go forward, but we are considering those. And again, it has to do with economic viability. Childcare, it's a priority for our county and many places across our country. And what stood out to us from the beginning is that it's not allowed in rural wooded at all. So that's something we're hoping that there's some low-hanging fruit. Another thing that we're taking a look at is, can this possibly be permitted by right with explicit conditions? We've heard from folks who want to open childcare centers or in-home and find that if they don't know the conditions in advance, so is there a way that we can build those out to bring more predictability to the process for them? So that's something that we're looking into with respect to childcare. Events is another one. So again, similar to childcare, it's event facilities, that's the official term in our code, are not allowed in rural wooded. So we're taking a look at that. We're taking a look at what would those conditions look like. Should it be off of a county road? Are there different scales that we can look at? For example, small, medium, large, currently it's up to 200. Could there be certain conditions for something up to 50 people? To kind of break this down a little bit more to make it more palatable, because the other side that we want to continue to consider is land use compatibility. So that's another area that we're actively researching right now to propose something for September 2nd. The next one, actually just very recently, boundary line adjustments has been moved out of Year of the Rural, but will run parallel. So you all will be hearing about that and more information about that at a future Planning Commission meeting. And then finally, mobile home park preservation. So this is something that was on our list to look into. It was a priority for the commissioners. It is the second largest housing type, although very significantly lower than single family in rural. And we're having a meeting with, we might not have to do anything. The state, a state bill just passed recently. It was Senate Bill 5298, that is Manufactured Mobile Housing Landlord-Tenant Act. And that increases notification of a sale and kind of has put more restrictions or more requirements to that. So I will be talking about that, but it might already be taken care of. But it was on our list to make sure from a land use standpoint, is there anything more that can be done to protect, maintain what we have for our mobile home park preservation because it is an affordable option in rural areas. And then not covered, I will say there is one more that continues to kind of go between the active and the future, but it has to do with land use compatibility and the agriculture code and what's allowed and are there conditions. We continue to look at it, so stay tuned. I'm not sure where it's going to land. We're continuing to look into it, so stay tuned on what that could look like, but it's related to land use compatibility. Future, so you already know that there was a moratorium on the BESS, so that was shifted out, and I'm really grateful for that so it can get the attention that it deserves. Reclassification request process, so as we've gone through this, we've been actively working with the Kitsap County Code 2108060 and 2108070. That's our process for the reclass, and once you work with something intimately, you have feedback on it, and we have feedback on it. So that's not, ideally maybe we would update it and do it all at the same time, but realistically that's not going to happen. So, but we're keeping it on here as future because it's fresh in our minds and how can we update this and also perhaps propose a timeline for the future of when these can be considered. For example, 5 years after the publication of a comp plan is something that we're considering, but not proposing it during this year of the rule. A rural lands analysis. So we are doing data analysis, we are doing this, but I mentioned earlier that the buildable lands report and the land capacity analysis does not focus on rural. And so we are proposing something that is what we're calling a rural lands analysis that talks about what is the development capacity in rural and then what should be protected and kind of looking at that in a different way. And why it hasn't been done historically is it's not required. And the focus of a comprehensive plan is to direct that growth to the urban growth areas. So this is kind of flipping that. And to me, why I think it's important, it's how do we double down on what we want to preserve and then acknowledge what can be developed and acknowledge that. And then in-home businesses. So as we've been looking at, for example, the child care code and looking at in-home daycare, it falls under the in-home business, and you know, as you look at one thing, you're like, "Oh my goodness, this needs some work too." And my understanding is this code was drafted before the internet, so this is something in the future. We're not going to be able to solve it today. What we can help with childcare is where it's permitted, but the fact that the in-home daycare falls under in-home business, we can't fix that this year. But we are acknowledging that that's something that should be looked at into the future, or in the future. Reclassification requests, so we had 17 initially and 14 were related to residential and were removed from the docket. These are the three remaining, and so we're working on our staff reports for each of these. You'll see the one on your left and the center is a request to rural industrial, and it's from rural wooded, that first one, so app ID 07 is from rural wooded to rural industrial. And I will acknowledge that there is industrial and commercial development that already exists there that existed pre-GMA. So 1970s, according to our permits, but perhaps even existed before that time. So just want to acknowledge that part of that. And then the one in the middle, that's from rural residential to rural industrial. You'll note that it's right near another industrial zone. Or two other industrial zoned parcels, but also 12 Trees Employment Center. So we're noting that. It also has existing development on there. And what you see here is what's being proposed. So if it were to look like what exists, it would show the green. And then the final one that we're doing our analysis, and I had mentioned 2108070, that's what we're using to do this analysis and prepare the staff report. This one is to go from rural protected to rural commercial. And this one's also noteworthy. It's on a state road, so is the one on the middle, and then the one on your left, app ID 07, is on a county road. So that's just a sample of some of the things that we're looking at. We also look at critical areas and a variety of other things that are stated in 2108. We also look to see how do these proposed zoning changes align with the comp plan, and so you'll see that come out in our staff report. So what's next? I had mentioned September 2nd, that's when we're publishing our draft. Those will be published on the website, and that's when our public comment period opens. We'll be having a forum for that. I was looking at how the Parks Department did theirs and really liked how they had a forum for us on our end to analyze in a forum format versus pulling everything out of emails will be tremendous, save us a lot of time and help with our analysis and aggregating of that information. And then I mentioned earlier, we have the Community Advisory Committee presentations, we have the open house, and then September 23rd is when I'll be meeting with you all to give our presentation, and when that'll be our public hearing when folks can come in and provide their testimony. And then October 7th, we will have our deliberations. So that's when we go back and forth, and we'll be creating a deliberations table where we outline the topics that you bring up, and either I can answer it there, or I will come back and answer it later, or, you know, if we can sort it out right here, that's great. And all this, sometimes it takes more time, or sometimes we're all on the same page and we move it forward. And then October 21st will be the Planning Commission findings of fact and the recommendations. Most likely from the 7th to the 21st, we'll be wrapping up some things. We will have answered some of your questions, and then you might have some additional edits. But that's when we close that loop from the Planning Commission, and then the recommendations is what's provided to the Board of County Commissioners. And then their hearing date will be November 10th, and we'll have deliberations with the Board of County Commissioners, and hopefully this ideally is the home stretch, and then we're looking towards adoption on December 8th. And that's all I have for today, and happy to answer any questions.
Heather, are you heading up the parallel boundary line adjustment review, or who's going to be staffing that? Do we know?
Terry Sully.
Okay.
And I will say, I think this is important, you didn't ask me this, but they are engaging with surveyors and folks who had made comments during the comp plan process, so they're looking, and I think that was a big reason why this got pulled out, so there could be additional engagement. Yeah.
I don't have a question, but I just wanted to say the level of like thoughtfulness and community engagement that you're undertaking in this process. Just a huge kudos to you and staff that have poured into this. I can tell it's been very poured into. Very much appreciated doing this in bits, and you know, doing like the 60% complete plan. And I feel like it really gives the whole community, all stakeholders, an opportunity to speak and be heard. And so your efforts are very much appreciated. I think this is very thoughtful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Other questions? In follow-up to Mr. Palmer, who is on your agricultural working group?
It includes, and it's the steering committee, and then we've reached out to the greater, and it's also published on our website, so I apologize if I miss anyone. So there's several representatives from KCAA, Kitsap County Agriculture Alliance, and we have the Conservation District, we have UW Extension, we have the Mason-Kitsap Farm Bureau, and I could list their names too, but I don't wanna, but we have representation from those groups on our working group steering committee that I will touch base with again in September. And then we did outreach to the greater agricultural community, one in a working group to talk about comp plan and code, and then another several workshops to get reactions, and then had an agricultural specific survey. So I don't know if that answers your questions.
It's a great start.
Okay.
The other question he had was, are you looking at things that you can take out of
deregulation? So I think what we're looking for at this point, I won't use that word, but clarification. So sometimes when I hear, you know, feedback on things, I can tell that it's confusing, or we kind of fall in a gap and things like that. So I wouldn't say that we're working towards deregulation, but we are working towards clarification. And I will say that economic viability has been a common theme as part of this process as it relates to the agricultural community and then other folks trying to run rural businesses. So not deregulation, but hopefully some clarification.
Other questions? Anybody? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
next item of business is a work study for 2025 standards for sanitary sewer construction update.
Is this a good volume for everyone? Okay, wonderful. Well, good evening, commissioners. It's good to see you again, and a couple new faces since I was here last. This workshop doesn't have to take 2 hours. I'll get into that, and if we're hitting a wall with attention, we can certainly take a break as well. There's a lot of material to cover. I'll try to break it out into a couple focus sessions, and we'll see where we get. There is always the opportunity for a second workshop, but if we're able to make a lot of progress today, that would be awesome. So we'll jump into it. Sure. Is that better? I hear myself echo, but probably sounds different over there. So, my name is Anthony Burgess. I'm a capital project manager with the Sewer Utility Division of Public Works, and we are talking about our sewer standards update. I'll briefly go over what we touched on in the briefing. We'll, at a high level, kind of talk about what it is we do as a utility, why we have standards, and then we'll get right into the discussion of updates. And the majority of these slides will be supporting the highlighted sections of the standards. So we will have a slide for each of the selections. Just as another recap, we do have the option for a second work study, and we'll touch base on that topic at the end of this discussion. One of the options with a second work study is if we have a lot of good discussion and there's a desire for me to tweak something, that gives me a little bit of time to do so, and I can bring it back, or I can do it live. So what is sewer? For those of you who have no idea what that means at a municipal level, it is the conveyance system, which takes everything from your toilet, your shower, your sink, through a system of pipes and structures and things called pump stations or lift stations, and it all pushes it to a treatment facility. At that treatment facility, we treat the water and we treat the solids. The water goes back into the sound. That is regulated by the Department of Ecology. We do an excellent job here at the county of meeting those permit requirements. And the solids go through a heated process called digestion. Those are the moisture is taken out through a few different mechanical methods, and it is shipped towards a reuse facility in Eastern Oregon for agricultural use. And that is also heavily regulated, and we do a great job of meeting those requirements. We serve the communities of Silverdale, Poulsbo, Bangor, and Kitsap in our central service area. We also have a urban growth area or sewer service area for Manchester, Kingston, and the community of Suquamish. We have a lot of pipe, 4 treatment plants, and 65 pump stations and growing. Why the update? Sewer has not had a comprehensive update to their standards in many, many years. Those requirements were not easily understood and difficult to locate. Some of the requirements were seen as barriers to development, which we wanted to discuss. And a lot of them were not consistent with current construction practices. The majority of this document was never formally updated. The last time it was touched was in the 90s. So this is an effort to fix that. We've also had several policy changes over the last few years that need to be represented somewhere. And this is the document which we hope to represent them in. So what we did is we updated the language and figures into a modern format. We've included those policies in the document, reorganized the document to be a resource and tool for the development community. Your standards are only as good as they can be understood. So we've actually modeled this format after Pierce County. We expanded on a lot of gray areas or silent topics. We've updated means and methods, which is a
an industry term we use for how you actually put something together. And we've structured the document intending to reduce ambiguity, and we've brought the document to you in two parts. The first part is what I'm calling Priority 1, and this is back to that means and methods description. So these are industry-specific requirements that are not really meant to be open for exhaustive public deliberation. By all means, though, ask questions if they come up. These means and methods directly correlate to system operation, maintenance safety, and ensure the longevity of our infrastructure. There's a lot of information within this document that does need to be updated as written, which is why we broke it into two parts. The second focus is focusing on what I'm calling development issues. So these are new or expanded ideas, which are discretionary and change between jurisdiction to jurisdiction. The specific development regulations include policies or other allowances that are not outright covered in standard construction documents like the WSDOT DOT manual or ecology guidance documents. Each of these topics will have its own slide, and those are the yellow sections highlighted in the document. As a note, these standards were shared with the Kitsap Builders Association. They are consistently the most vocal community when it comes to sewer construction practices. They deal in this document the most, even more so than homeowners. We discussed it. Apologies, I'm blanking on the date, but I think it's 4 to 6 weeks prior to this date. We received a few comments, which was great, and I think they actually echo Mr. Shattuck, did you provide the comments? So we'll address that on a specific slide. So a quick summary on the jurisdiction means and methods. We can go back to that after we get through part two, because I think that's going to be the primary focus of this first discussion. And then if we get into more of the specifics, we can come back to part one. But the theme here is that we have cleaned up our standards. We've had a few policy changes which allow for more contractor involvement. Previously, the county had a lot of control over work. We're trying to open that up to the general public who are licensed and bonded to do the work. We've included references to an ecology manual for alternative trenching techniques. That's helpful for more challenging installations. And then we've increased some requirements for what a public cleanout looks like, and we'll get into that a little bit more in one of the policies. So part two, and this is where we'll have a slide for each. We have a policy prohibiting septic system conveyance to the county. There's a very specific lesson learned, which we hope to not repeat in the future. This is not a common thing to happen for sewer utilities to own septic systems. So this just gets right out in front of the issue if it ever comes up again. What I am expecting quite a bit of discussion on is pipe installed within private roadways, not being dedicated to the county. There's a lot of reasons behind that concept, and there's been a lot of discussion on that from the Builders Association. Blockages without a clean out in the right-of-way, we'll get into that a little bit more. Easement widths, this primarily has to do with constructability. Pipe zone bedding requirements, that's a fun one. Increasing the max number of individual pump station connections, this is another area where we had quite a bit of feedback from the KBA. That Builders Association. Minimum site-specific requirements for developer-built lift stations, and a discussion of our tolerance of bellies in pipelines. And it was on July 10th when we met with the KBA. So any questions before I dive into each of the highlighted areas? Okay. So the county will not inherit, own, or operate septic systems. We have a Miller Bay or the Seacrest community in the Suquamish area, we were given a septic system in the late 70s, which has been a maintenance nightmare. We are working to correct some field deficiencies and figure out if there's an option to give that system back to the community. It's a very early process, but we hope to not get into those situations in the future. In discussions with the health district, it's a very odd predicament to be in. They've never seen that elsewhere either, at least not in Kitsap County. Any questions on that topic? Okay. Systems constructed in private roadways or within commercial and residential private property will not be dedicated to the county and will remain under private ownership. So I'll do a little bit of a preamble and then we can go over some of the public comments. The way to digest that is anything outside of the right-of-way. This language says we would not inherit. Currently, we do not inherit pipe on commercial private property. This language is constructed to address primarily private roads in subdivisions. The reason why we brought this forward as a topic to discuss is there's a lot of private roads being constructed with public sewer. As the county, we lose a certain degree of control. If you, as a HOA, want to do a grand project in your private road, you don't have to talk to anyone. We don't have the ability for a contractor to file for what's called a right-of-way permit, where there are specific terms and conditions which make sure our utility is protected. So that was the reason why we brought it up. We took that before the KBA, and we were met with strong opinions on why that doesn't work. Primarily, it had to do with the potential long-term effects on HOAs, which may not be regulated in a very organized fashion. So this is an area where I'm very curious on what your thoughts and opinions are. It does not have to stay in the document as written, but this was an area where, one more note of context, when we started working through a rate discussion with the Board of County Commissioners, they asked us to explore all feasible routes to reduce costs on the ratepayers. This has the potential to increase costs on a certain neighborhood, but it would lower the burden on the ratepayer base as a whole across all service areas. That's a lot to throw at you. I want to open it up to your thoughts and opinions. Yes?
Lindsay, I sent a question out exactly on this issue to you. And it seems to me that it is a huge issue. I mean, you just look at what's happened to Florida condos, right? Suddenly, responsibility for work on those condos has gone up. Those condos and associations are exploding because people can't afford that process. Always struck me when you're dealing with sewer in a private roadway that first, you know, these things are being built to county standards. They're, you know, the exact same model as what you have in your right-of-way. Second, the developer has actually paid for that infrastructure based on what you require. They've paid a connection fee to the sewer, just like somebody in the right-of-way. They're paying sewer fees, just like people in the right-of-way. They're paying property taxes for public works, just like everyone else. And it seems to me, in fact, public works gets a great deal out of this because they don't have to maintain the road. Okay, right? I mean, you got to maintain the right-of-way. You're saying, geez, if you've got a private road in your little four-unit subdivision, we're not going to take care of your sewer. We're not going to take your road, but the guy right next door to you, we're going to take care of his road and his sewer. What's the difference between those two? Okay. So that's the starting point of my discussion. It's just having worked with homeowners associations for 40 years as a lawyer, these are groups that have a hard time putting together the funding to have the annual picnic. much less setting aside money for reserve for maintenance of a sewer system that's going to need to be done 30 years from now. So that's my concern. I expect that's probably what you're hearing from the builders groups.
Very similar themes. So, thank you.
Can you give us an idea of how much of this existing pipe is on private roadways or in new developments?
Is that countywide?
Is it a
lot? It's interesting. So I'm involved in development plan review for the sewer utility. I don't get into the land use designations or anything like that. We are seeing more and more private roadways in very large developments, over 70, 80 homes. These are not small 10 to 20 lot developments. These are very large projects. From the sewers, I have some personal thoughts on it. I'm not representing the roads department at all. It can be cheaper for a developer to not meet the public roadway standards. Typically, they're wider. You may have sidewalks on one or both sides. A private road allows a developer and designer to meet different dimensional requirements, which can increase your lot count and help with the affordability of the project. So there's a direct correlation to home prices as well. It's a bit of a balancing act. The primary concern that the sewer utility has is even if we have it in an easement, it's difficult to police if Comcast rolls through the site and bores right through our pipe. And it happens more often than not. Does that answer your question? Okay.
But I'm right again that this sewer is built to your standard. No one's saying that the developer is getting to cut corners on the sewer itself. I mean, you've got a standard here, whether it's in a private road or if it's in a public right-of-way, the developer has to meet your standard to hook to your system.
It does afford the builder different options. So the way we enforce our codes is we typically say, this is how we do it. If you can't do it that way, tough. In a private setting, you can be more creative. A good example of this is the hospital expansion, the St. Michael's Tower. They had to build a sewer line over a very large retaining wall structure. So they did not meet our standards on that. It was commercial property. We were able to allow that to be private. They were able to get close, but not meet our standard, and it was fine. So in certain circumstances, it can be helpful.
But in most standards, I'm sorry. I mean, in most situations, the sewer is built to your standard in a private roadway.
Correct.
The county is reviewing that.
Correct.
And again, I appreciate what you're saying. Boy, there's a couple of 80 unit developments that are doing that. I'm more concerned about the little private road with four units or with six units. And you focus on, boy, there is a couple of big ones going in. We got a lot more little ones, right? We got a lot of little four-lot short plats and six-lot plats on a private road than we do big developments. It's been my experience.
Adrienne?
I just have two small points. So say there was an issue with the on a private road and that were to come to you all, would you all, I'm just kind of thinking in practice, right, get involved, provide appropriate guidance? Like if that does come to your desk, how would you respond if this provision moves forward?
We're always a resource for the mm-hmm. community. In this large document, we talk about individual pump stations. Those are private grinder systems for a homeowner. Those are privately owned and maintained, but we require a form be recorded on that property that in the event of something unforeseen happen, it's a health emergency, we do step in. We have that ability to, and there's language that we can then charge for our efforts. We're generally very affordable in compared to other services. So in the event we had a neighborhood where a blockage happened, We are a 911 response authority, and we have the means to help as needed.
Thank you.
Was there another question over here?
So would there be a way to have, because you talk about, you know, if somebody drills a hole through the system, but would there be a way if they did build it to all your code standards, and then so maybe that group could have you maintaining it, but if they did something, then that would kind of like kick them out of the system or do something, like is that, would that be a possible, you know, just trying to come up with like a sort of like a middle ground. I mean, I do understand that things happen, but those same things happen in public lands as well.
All the time.
Right. So it's not like that's an unknown concept, right? And so is there, that would be one way that where you maintain it, but they still get the private road.
Yeah, I think there's an ability to look at it if there's interest in pursuing it. You know, we communicated to the board that we would pursue all options. I'm certainly getting a lot of criticism on this one, which is fine. But what I wanted to make sure is we had an accurate read from the community at large of what their thoughts were on it. Ultimately, if it's not supported, we will not pursue residential, large-scale residential privatized pipe. We'll only stick with our current allowances for keeping commercial pipe private. So if there's a lot of criticism here, that's fine. I'm looking for the feedback to say, you know, our recommendation is don't do that. And we can communicate that to the board when we move this forward. Ashley?
So one of the things you said, Anthony, was that taking this approach puts extra burden on other ratepayers. Why is that? Everybody's in paying the same rate. The sewer is built to the same standard. So if you have four extra lots on your sewer system, those four people are paying sewer fees. Why is, if it's all the same standard, is that a bigger risk to the other ratepayers?
It really has to do with if a neighborhood is not well ran and if critical issues come up more frequently. Because there's not that requirement for a right-of-way permit where there's specific steps to make sure that your contractor is going to do the work well, there's additional risk. Okay. And then that risk would be borne by the ratepayers who are on a public road where that mechanism is in place.
Just a follow-up to that is, I think that was a great question. We've got a problem in a six-lot little subdivision, and the pipe needs work. They don't have the money. So do we red tag those houses? What's our response as the county or the public health to six houses that don't have access to sewer and can't pay to fix it?
It's not a situation we would want to be in, and we would probably end up inheriting the pipe in the end.
You'd probably do what? I'm sorry.
Inherit the pipe in the end, because like if the properties can't afford it, we may end up being the benefactor of that pipe regardless.
But that's not what your code says.
But not as proposed.
There's no basis within the standards for that to happen, right? It's kind of like, well, we'll just make something up if that occurs to make sure that doesn't happen. Shouldn't be, I don't think, what we should be doing with a code or a standard. It should be saying, if this happens, here's what we do. And so that's at a minimum what I do.
So if there was support for this, a greater amount of detail is needed to identify what the reaction would be to some of those specific scenarios.
And just to piggyback off of that, I just think you pair that kind of potential scenario with a growing population and, you know, to meet our affordable housing targets, right? We're talking probably an increase in, you know, more private roads. So just thinking about could some maybe like a one-off actually become a more reoccurring issue that could be, yeah, present, yeah, concerns.
And this could be an issue that's discussed at a broader level when roadway is discussed. You know, there are, in the future, there's going to be discussion of roadway standard changes. That may be the more appropriate time to tackle the private road issue. Now, we're a player in that roadway section. There's a lot of other utilities out there that are going to face similar issues. So that's an option.
Yes. Forgive me if this has been presented, but is there currently a cutoff number of units, number of plats to where it goes from county maintained, where it's commercially maintained, larger developments where it's privately maintained sewer?
For commercial, those are primarily multifamily complexes.
Okay.
So you have a commercial organization already managing many maintenance components of a site, and that's why current requirements, that's a requirement for commercial properties. We don't inherit that pipe.
Okay.
But for residential, we don't have a cap. This is really just is the community interested in this? And there's a lot of concern for it.
My thought around that is, I completely agree with you, Richard, that the smaller communities, I would say probably under 20 plats and down, 20 residences and down, we're going to run into that where they don't have the means to address emergencies and things like that. And I think it can get really convoluted if there is an emergency, the county comes in, they save the day, and they say, oh, by the way, our bill is we're going to take over the maintenance of this pipe and we're going to inherit it. I think that would be a little bit tough given the fact that these folks have basically paid for that pipe and paid for all the maintenance depending on their longevity in that residence. And so curious if there's maybe a good cutoff or maybe a point, where you look at these massive developments where there's hundreds of homes and they have significant HOA fees where they can bear the burden of a sewer failure or anything like that. Curious if there's maybe a unit or a number of residences that makes sense. Maybe it's a 25 and up within a division. You're to maintain it. Anything down, maybe it's the decision of the HOA with the county to maybe the HOA can vote and say, hey, we want to take this on. We're solvent enough. We can manage this. We feel confident. I don't know, and I don't have the answer to that either. Just trying to, what's a creative way to meet the needs, not just require everybody. You're on your own in a sense. I know that's not true, but you're on your own. How do we find that happy middle to where we're kind of pleasing the most and not just doing this massive blanket to all parties? And so I don't know. I don't know what the right thing is, but that's just a thought maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a creative approach. There's an ability for that option for larger communities, not the smaller communities that are going to be more heavily impacted. That's a creative way to balance the concerns and the realities of what that policy would entail.
Yeah, and it gives the homeowners, landowners, the opportunity to say, we're fit to do this. And there's some that might not. That might say, we're here on zero lot line, small little community, and we're just wanting to have this house. Just a thought, just how to kind of work through that.
Yeah, that's appreciated.
Yeah, thank you.
Brings up the question of would you rather. We have cases in Manchester where they have private systems and a whole private sewage system. Would the county rather have lots of those little things drifting around, or would you rather have them on a one centralized managed system? Is there an ecological factor that goes into this? How many of these little ones do you want to create and not bring into the system?
That's a great question, and I don't have the answer to it, but that's certainly something to explore. I do have a follow-up once everyone's asked their questions, because I think I have a theme here that I can make a suggestion of how to tackle this specific issue.
I think one thing that I'm picking up on that we're voicing is some type of equity assessment and really thinking about the fairness of that across the diversity of our community.
What I would propose is that this initiative to consider not requiring dedication, meaning pipe within residential neighborhoods. This is not commercial private property. This is residential neighborhoods. We don't explore that initiative with this code cycle. I'm hearing that if we were to do that, there's a lot more work to be done. And frankly, we don't have the resources to do that. And the needs of the document need to move forward. So what I can do is reword this sentence to be specific to commercial private property only. I don't know.
Moving right along.
Okay. I will do that. And I added a little more to this slide just because I figured we'd talk about that for a while. Easements. So easements are area of protection that give, they grant access, they grant maintenance. Our historical easement width has been 15 feet wide, regardless of if the sewer main is 5 feet deep or 25 feet deep. There's a real issue with safety when you actually have to rebuild that pipeline. And what we're exploring is increasing those easement widths incrementally, dependent on depth. Once you exceed 10 feet, or excuse me, 15 feet wide easement for anything up to 10 feet, 20 feet beyond that, anything deeper than 15 feet, it's a case-by-case discussion with each project. That gives us blanket protection in the majority of circumstances, and it gives the development community clear direction on how to meet our expectations or when to engage us in the design process. Okay. Blockages is something new. We modeled this language after how the city of Bremerton handles it. This primarily has to do with our utility system in Navy Yard City. We inherited a sewer district once upon a time, and we don't have cleanouts anywhere. It's very difficult to tell where a blockage is occurring when you don't have a cleanout, and we very often have to work with homeowners to find out, is it an issue in the house? Is it in the yard? Is it in the road? So this language lays out the process that we would work through. It requires the homeowner do some due diligence on their end before they call the utility. If it's an emergent scenario, they can always call the utility. No one's going to stop them. But it dissuades some of the frequent flyers or property management companies that don't do a great job from relying on us to do their work. And then there's a process. Oops, I skipped over that. There's a process that once the issue is found, it gets fixed either on the homeowner's responsibility if it's in their property. If it's in the road, we'll fix it. And then a clean out is built after the fact so that the issue doesn't occur again.
Questions? Comment. How many emergency repair people in the private sector around here? If we had one of these things and you said housing community, it's your problem to fix, who do they go to?
These are typically individual homeowner issues. And usually it's the homeowner doesn't want to call a plumber to see if the issue is at their house, they call us first. So this policy is to have the homeowner, if it's blowing up in their yard and it's something crazy, we'll respond. But it's to get the homeowner to call a plumber first to see if they can find the issue. And if the plumber determines that it's beyond the property line, that's when we would step in.
But there aren't a lot of companies that, other than you, that could fix it out in the road.
If it's in the road, it would be us. It's generally more expensive to hire a contractor to do that. There are a lot of companies that do that. And there's a tremendous amount of local companies that do the plumbing work that would be able to find it.
Do you maintain a list, say, call Ajax or?
Nope. We let the Yelp do that for us. I think Adrienne, you were first.
I just might need to read this more carefully, but I'm trying to decipher. So the piece that it's the customer's responsibility to prove right to Public Works. So mm-hmm. they themselves would work with whomever they have called or that company. And then do you see me? What do you mean by prove to Public Works? Like what is needing to be proven, or like what is that evidence that you all would need?
Usually it's the professional judgment of the hired plumber, or there's a jetter is a term used in here.
Okay.
So they can determine based on how much hose they put down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's 30 feet and your lawn is only 20 feet wide or long. Yeah, we're in the road. It's the county's problem.
Okay. So in your experience, are companies open to doing that? Like basically giving that recommendation or providing that guidance, and then do you see what I mean? Would mm-hmm. they be open to that?
Yeah, it's. I've not heard of one not doing it. It's what the homeowner would be asking them to do, and it'd be part of their service fee for that task.
And then it'd be something like in writing, or do you see what I mean? Or does the homeowner then call you back and say, hey, my person said that, you know what I mean?
We're pretty collaborative in that process, so we'll often have people, some of our maintenance team show up at the site when they're doing the work. So the homeowner will coordinate with the plumber is doing the harder work. We have either an inspector or a conveyance crew worker at the site. We go, yep, it's in the road, we'll take it from here, or well, it's not, we can't do anything to help because we don't have easements on their private property.
Okay, thank you.
Anthony, is this language the language that the city of Bremerton uses in terms of just prove? I had the same question, is that, you know, there's, I'm never worried about you. I mean, you're a reasonable man. I'm worried about the next person who's not reasonable in terms of saying, no, I want, you know, a 10-page report issued by, or I want the television scope of the pipe to see what that is. So if I'm just wondering if there's some history of how this is actually being applied from people who may not be reasonable.
That's a great question. Generally, we are a ratepayer-focused utility. We typically give them the benefit of the doubt. We'll often do work that we shouldn't be doing because we want to help. Can always change person to person. One thing I can do is maybe define what prove means, and you know, we'll reword that to be mutual discovery with personnel on site. So it's not you shall prove, but it's a collaborative process. A
confirmation by a licensed professional.
Okay.
You know, something straightforward. The final other question I have here is, boy, I as a homeowner, sewer doesn't work. It's the county's sewer that's causing the problem. That's where the blockage is. But now I, as the homeowner, get to pay to put a clean out in. All I did was have my toilets fill up. And so what is the cost of putting in a clean out associated with a problem like this?
I would say the project would be in the hundreds of dollars. And if it's our issue, we would fix it at our cost. Yes.
I just have a quick question. So is there a chargeback option? So if a homeowner has a problem and it's found after the plumber comes and investigates that it's actually a county problem, do they have the ability to submit that bill to the county for reimbursement through a chargeback?
I'm glad you said that. I just wrote that down. One of the things we often do is we will TV align to see if it's within our jurisdiction, because that's something that we're very well equipped to do. If we can't easily find the issue with our TV equipment, that's generally when we ask the homeowners, say, you need to hire a plumber and take a closer look. So we do our part to make sure it's not our fault first, and then we will advise the homeowner to pursue other options. Yes.
But I thought this was so that you didn't do it first. I got a little confused.
The language is a little circular.
Yeah, I feel like maybe this needs to get cleaned up a tiny bit.
The intent is that we are not doing work on private property. So if we can find that the issue is in the road, we'll take care of it. But if it's in between the house and whatever else they've constructed on their property before it gets to that right-of-way edge.
So do they need to do the scope first before they call you? Or you just said you would scope to double-check that it wasn't you guys? So
the cadence of events isn't clear, is it?
No.
Okay.
And then, which gets back to who pays, because if you're asking the homeowner to scope and it's 100% you guys, then they need to get their money back. But if it was easier for you to scope first,
mm-hmm.
and then I guess my other question was, who are you? You alluded to the fact that you're trying to solve a problem that you guys are having. So is this going to really solve that problem?
If the problem, it's usually some kind of blockage due to a lot of grease put down the pipe or flushing something that shouldn't be flushed, or in the case of Navy Yard City, very old infrastructure. We still have clay pipe. We've stumbled upon wooden pipe before. Those things fall apart. It just depends. What we're trying to do is draw a line in the sand. If it's in the road, that's on us to fix. If it's on private property, that's really not our responsibility.
And that's not clear now, because I thought, I'm finding out incorrectly, that if I have an issue on my private property in my drain situation, that is my issue. But you're saying that's not clear in our code currently.
It's the cadence of events, and nothing in our code says that the property owner must provide some due diligence in the event that we can't locate the issue. What we experience is that some very adamant homeowners have a good way of twisting arms of directors and commissioners, and we end up responding and doing work on private property, which we shouldn't be doing. That's not what we pay our staff to do. It shouldn't be an issue, but it is. We have to write something down so that we can point to language that says this is the process.
So I think you just need to clean up that language.
I agree completely. Any other thoughts on the blockages?
Just a quick question, I guess. I definitely think like the order of events on mm-hmm. how you have a problem, step one, step two, step three. And I mean, I do see where you're going with the beginning of that cadence, which is it's the customer's responsibility, the homeowner's responsibility to reach out to Public Works, during business hours or 911 if it is an emergency. So that is virtually your step one. And I would imagine if they called into Public Works and spoke with someone in that department, they would go through a troubleshooting process together, mm-hmm. fact-finding, planning, okay, you're going to call XYZ plumber, you know, all of that. But I think there should also be language in here, too, to protect the county as well around the requirements that it's a licensed and bonded plumber. Just making sure that way I don't call my brother and say, hey, can you scope my sewer line, you know, and write me a $5,000 bill that I get to back charge the county, you know, or whatever that really looks like. I've seen some crazy things in other municipalities mm-hmm. happen. And so just like that, those like little granular things where people kind of slip and slide, those are like really sure ways to not only protect the community at large, but also the the county. I think it's important to have that be a mutually beneficial languaging.
And we've had licensed contractors do some interesting work as well. So
no,
I agree
that,
completely.
No, that can't be. Yeah.
That was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else before we move on? Okay. Materials. So Kitsap County has a long-standing practice of allowing a type of backfill material. So this is what gets scooped into the trench called pea gravel. Pea gravel is really what's considered clean, so there's no fine sediment in it. It's very round and loose. It's cheap. It doesn't require compaction, which means you don't have to whack it with a compactor plate or install it in what we call lifts, which is 6 to 18 inches of depth at a time. That's not good for our pipe. What it allows our pipe to do is actually move over time, and we get something called bellies, which is where you have a straight section of pipe and there's a dip, and then that's a big puddle collecting a lot of things you don't want to collect in a pipe. So as a theme with this update is we are increasing our requirements for pipe installation so that we get a good product and we don't have rework. A lot of these developments install at the minimum slope, which means there's zero room for tolerance. So if we have a pipe that settles even more over time, it becomes a lifelong burden for the utility to manage. This is not a new concept. This is echoed in many other communities. What we are specifying for a material is a standard material. It's commercially available. It has more angles to the rock, and it has to be compacted. And we are being very strict that we are not allowing pea gravel in the trench anymore. And this is actually an immediate change that we've done just because it has a very real-world effect on our system long-term. So all the projects in construction right now, maybe with exception of one or two, they're not using pea gravel. And it's not a big deal if you catch it at the beginning of the project. They shift their numbers. They know where to get the rock from. We move forward.
Suggestion? Mm-hmm. Where you say section 9-03.17 class B, I would recommend you put a parent in there and say 3/4 inch minus or whatever it is, so there's somebody English that specifies to the people that are looking.
Provide the common name for the material. Yeah, that's a great tip.
And then on your last paragraph,
mm-hmm.
I would put unauthorized use of any other material would result in reexcavation. I don't think you have to call it pea gravel. I also think that if you want to give them the ability to use a different material, you just state, I'm assuming in some other part we have a process that you go through to change a material type for a special case scenario. And I would want to just point them back to that so that you're not adding a new special way of somebody being able to change your information.
So unauthorized use of any non-approved material,
mm-hmm.
And then outline a very simple to follow process if you want to use something else.
Right. I'm assuming somewhere in the document there's a change of something. That's been already approved,
mm-hmm.
and you would have to go through that full approval, which normally requires lots of documents.
And I don't have the section offhand, but
right.
We do mention in the document that if you have a geotech that
yes.
is supportive of the material, we rely on their credentials as yes. a geotechnical professional.
Right. I would just point them back to that,
okay.
just so you're not complicating a revision of documents. That way every revision goes through the same process.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great tip. This is why your comments are so helpful.
Oops, sorry. And would this provision would go into effect immediately? We wouldn't give time, or do you see what I mean, give people time to acquire new material, or do you see that being an issue?
No. For all projects that have started construction within the past, pretty much since the start of summer, we've been communicating this. Because it is an industry standard practice, it was just highlighting to the KBA specifically so they know about it. And this group, Kitsap County's been the Wild West for sewer installation for many years, and we're trying not to be that way anymore. We're following the standard practices that many other jurisdictions do specific to pipe installation. Yeah?
I'm not sure you actually even need the sentence, the use of pea gravel for pipe bedding and pipe zone backfill is not permitted, but I'm fine with it staying in. It just
is. We have some real knuckleheads out
there. Okay, that's fine.
To your point, when that's been the standard and like what's been accepted for a long time, you have some contractors that have just assumed that that's going to stay the standard. So I agree with you. There are some folks that need that clarification.
To complement that, we have standard pre-con meetings that we do where we outline the general specifics. There's a lot of nitty-gritty details in here that don't need to be discussed. But big changes like that, we mention it at every project site with the contracting team. We want to help them be successful any way we can. Yes?
I don't know if right now is the time to make this small comment, but I want to commend you for working with other agencies, because that's some of the feedback professionally we get in our agency, is that there's no collaboration and no consistencies across agencies. And so when we have contractors working within Kitsap County and one agency is requiring one thing and another agency is requiring another, it adds confusion and frustration. So I commend you for collaborating with other agencies, City of Bremerton and others, as you pull together your standards. It's just something to think about.
A common theme in municipal work is we plagiarize a lot, and we try to learn from other jurisdictions' lessons. I just realized that we have a virtual attendee, and I have not been answering their questions. Do I have access to those, Clara?
So they'll have to provide their public comment during the general public comment period. They aren't able to comment during this work study session.
I didn't know if that was a commissioner on virtual or if that was general public.
That was general public.
Okay.
Yep.
Apologies.
Thanks for asking, though.
Yeah. Let's get back going. Any other thoughts on the exciting topic of pipe zone bedding? Okay. No, sewer's not the most exciting topic for everyone. Are we feeling good? Keep going? Okay. This is another key issue or topic of conversation that the development community has been very vocal on. The sewer utility has a long-standing requirement that any development over than 10 lots must build a lift station. Lift station, it's a big pit in the ground with pumps that pumps the sewage uphill. They're very expensive. So this has been seen as a major barrier to development. The development community wants no restriction on this, which we're very uncomfortable with at this time. So we tried to find a middle ground. And what we are proposing supports full zoning density for the rural low area or urban rural low density. So you can get your max for a 1 acre parcel, you can build out to the max zoning without having to construct a lift station. This actually ends up complementing a lot of projects up to about 2.5 acres in size, because you have different setback requirements, you may have a stormwater pond, you may have critical areas. So this first step is a way to support development and reduce that expense barrier for the smaller projects. What this is not doing is allowing very large projects to not have to build developer lift stations. And the reason why we aren't proposing that right now, there's a lot of research that I need to do to talk to other jurisdictions that have significant lessons learned. So that's kind of some of the background behind this. What we're proposing supports smaller projects, it is an increase from our current standard from 10 to 15. We're changing the definition of lots to ERUs. That's because you may have duplexes, you may have a very small apartment complex, you may have a combination of single-family homes and ADUs. That definition of an ERU is more supportive to what those different development types look like. So it's a little more vague, it's a little more allowance for connections, but it wasn't seen as quite enough for some of the members of the KBA. So I want to open it up and get your thoughts on it.
Yes. Is ERU defined in the comp plan and definition section?
Thank you. I speak in acronyms. ERU, it is. It's equivalent residential
right,
unit.
But I'm saying I don't want to have a new defined term in one document that's supposed to be supporting the others. Is it a generally accepted term that's defined someplace?
Yes. Yes. An ERU is a house worth of sewage. So that's
no question. Just want to make sure it's defined someplace.
It sure is. I'm sorry, you don't have a name tag, and I'm terrible with names. Danielle, thank you. Yeah.
And I apologize for not knowing this, but what's a redundant pig launch?
A pig launch is a tube that we load. We call it a pig. It's a big foam plug, and we push it through the system with pressurized water, and that scrapes the inside of the pipe to remove accumulated grit or grease or whatever may end up down there. It's our way. It's the equivalent of flushing, which we do on a gravity line where we flush a lot of water down it to dislodge all of that. The redundancy is because we are allowing some of these to be private, but they're set up to be maintained, and we can maintain our portion of it. And in the event that an HOA goes defunct for some reason, it's built to our standard, and we can come in there and clean it as needed, or even provide the service for the HOA if that's the way they want to do it. Yes.
Anthony, one of the concerns I have with the standard you're using is how it relates to state law. We've just had the legislature provide that in urban low zones that people are entitled to build an ADU mm-hmm. on the property. So what you're saying here is, boy, you've got 15 residential units and you're on a forced main, that's it. Even though state law says, as a property owner, I'm entitled to build an ADU, so that I'm concerned how that works together.
That's a point of clarity I need to add to this section. So currently, if you have a single-family home and an ADU, as long as they share the same pipe, we consider it one ERU. It would be the same if you have two ADUs on the property. And the reason behind that is we treat a one-bedroom house the same as a six-bedroom house. So it kind of does, it all averages out over the time. What we don't have in this document is that specific policy, though. And I would add that either in here or in a municipal code update, that may belong more there. In actual code rather than in the construction standards. But to answer your question, if you had a development of 15 homes and they all had 15 ADUs, they would still be able to utilize the section of code.
And I'm going to go back to Alan's question and Commissioner Beam's question, and that is the definition of an ERU. I don't think what you're saying is consistent with what is in the comp plan. So again, we just need to sort that out.
Yeah, I'm tracking because they use a specific population number. Ultimately, this is the jurisdiction preference. As long as we're not overly restrictive compared to what's in state law, then we should be fine. But that's certainly something I can check into. I believe that this is all very well legal, but I'll take a look at that. Is there any discussion on trying to keep this small as a first step? Just referencing back to some of the comments that were given at our KBA discussion, their thoughts were, why couldn't you do this on an 80-lot development? We start to have the same concerns we do with private roads in general, and this is a very sensitive system. A gravity line, you get a crack in the pipe, maybe you never know. This type of facility, it's under pressure. You wouldn't want a water leak in the roadway. You certainly wouldn't want a sewer leak that's pressurized in the roadway. So our response to the development community is, this is our first step for this document. In future iterations of this manual, we can explore increasing that cap and how we do that. But we're just not ready to do it right now.
That's based on, I guess I'm not quite understanding the thought process that's going into that. We're not ready to do it right now. We don't have any scientific basis to say 15 is different than 20 or than 25. We just have this gut that we're not comfortable going higher. Is there a cost number? What's the basis of 15 rather than, other than, I understand the zoning mm-hmm. is really where you're landing.
We went with the zoning, and then also in this paragraph is there's a step process. So once you have a development relying on a pressurized system between 16 and 20 units, there is a requirement for a lift station, but not all the components that go into a lift station. We can look at increasing this in the future. We haven't done the exhaustive research. So this is something we're comfortable with doing now as an immediate response to the desires of the development community. It helps promote growth, densification in the urban low area. I think I said that right. But we have to take a look at the details greater before we look at it further.
Are you familiar with like some of our neighboring municipalities or maybe like kind counties? I know that we're kind of a unique bird, but similar type counties that have 15 plus ERU?
That was something I was really trying to research before this discussion. Our closest comparison is probably Pierce County.
Yeah.
And they have a few different philosophies. They maintain control of a lot of that, mm-hmm. which is not something we're set up to do. They actually own a lot of their IPSs, and that's not our policy in the county.
Okay.
There were some conversations, I just haven't gotten a call back.
Okay.
And what I didn't want to do is rush this specific allowance, which has a real, it has a lifelong impact on the utility. So it's not just what are you doing as a jurisdiction. I'd like 3 or 4 examples of where it's worked well and where it hasn't worked well. And I really like to talk to more than 3 or 4 jurisdictions so we can make a well-informed suggestion for this group here.
Yeah, in my experience, just in some of our neighboring municipalities, 15 to 20 is like a very common range. And those are like folks that are constantly like updating and analyzing these aren't, they're not their 1990s standards. No offense, Kitsap County.
None taken.
But I just think that might be give the county a little, Public Works a little bit more confidence in that. When you see a like-kind municipality that is successfully doing this, they're not running into a lot of issues. Like you said, plagiarize, you don't have to recreate the wheel there. You can get some of your risk tolerance mm-hmm. understanding that way. And so that's just a thought that I had. I do know that in the work that we do, it's 15 to 20 is pretty average outside of Kitsap County.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad it's on the lower end, but we're hitting that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And our goal with this is not to wait another 30 years to go through this effort again. We want to start looking at this document on a 2 to 3 year cycle.
I support that.
There's a lot of changes that happen. There's a lot of community needs that change, and we need to be reactive as a utility. Any other thoughts on this? I'm having a blast. I hope you are. This one's pretty straightforward. We have never had a minimum site requirement, so looking at a site plan, dimensions of a lot, or tract of where our lift stations go. We have everywhere from a very small piece of land, which is extremely difficult to access in the event of an emergency, to the Taj Mahal of lift station tracks where we really don't need that much space. What we've recently done is laid it all out based on all of our lessons learned, and we've identified that, and this is more impactful to plats that have to factor in zoning dimensions for their lots. 75, and that's not what it says in the slide, but 75 by 75 is what's said in the code. I just didn't update that slide, apologies. That's our minimum dimension need. By providing that up front, it gives the land developers who aren't going to build the project an ability to provide us enough space for who does build the project. It is common for, I'm going to call them flippers, to come in and buy a piece of raw land, go through all of the land use entitlements, get a hearing decision, and sell it to the builder. What we don't get in that exercise is any knowledge of what's going to go into that lift station area. Every project is a unique animal, and space needs can fluctuate greatly. 75 by 75 is that sweet spot, where for smaller projects, we might have a little bit more room than we need, and for larger projects, we may have a little bit less, but we can still get in there and do the work we need to in an emergency scenario. So happy to answer any questions. I'm hoping there's not too much criticism on this, but it is a kind of an innovative change from what I've seen across other jurisdictions. The goal here is to get the information to the designers as early as possible so that they can go through their lot calculations when they're balancing the myriad of other county requirements as you try to design a plat or if you're ordering fencing.
Your slide says 50 by 50.
I know. I did a poor job of QCing this. In the code, it says 75 by 75. Let me find the page for you. It is on page 38, 8.1.17. It does say 75 by 75. So apologies for the mix-up. Did you have another one? Okay. Television inspection. This complements our pipe material section. So this is where we specify that specifically the developer shall make every effort to avoid bellies in the sewer pipe. Any inadvertent belly shall not exceed 1/8 of an inch. This is considered a zero tolerance policy. Bellies that exceed 1/8 of an inch shall be repaired by the developer at the developer's expense. And this is wholly focused on making sure that we inherit good pipe that doesn't become a maintenance nightmare long term. The picture on the lower right is what we want to see. The picture on the left is not. That is a swimming pool of stagnant yuck water, which creates all kinds of issues with hydrogen sulfide creation and really challenging blockages to clear on larger pipelines. And this isn't that uncommon. City of Poulsbo has a very similar policy in place. Yes?
I'm curious. I guess, so if you are an 1/8 of an inch, how quickly can a belly grow? I guess is my question.
If you're using pea gravel, really fast. Mm-hmm. Generally, these are caught right at installation, and mm-hmm. these become contractor agency disputes. Oh, it's not that bad. Let it slide. So to have a policy in place that's very clear-cut means that when the contractor is doing their preliminary investigation, if they're seeing a big puddle, they know that they have an issue that they need to fix. And it can all be avoided with careful installation.
The engineer in me asked this question. How do you measure it?
So What we haven't made yet, but we'll probably custom make one, is this little plug on the lower right-hand side. And it's a little brass plug with rings on it. Then every ring is an eighth of an inch. So if you meet that first ring, you know it's an eighth of an inch when you camera the line, and it will get deeper. And if it's completely submerged, then we have a very large belly in excess of an inch in depth. Every company has their own version of that. I've seen ping pong balls. This one's a little more scientific. Not ping pong balls, they float, but golf ball? Any other questions? Okay. That was the end of the highlights. So what I'm really looking for is feedback from this group. If you think another workshop is needed on those discussion points, or if you feel like you've given me enough direction to come back with a clean set.
What is the next step? If we were to go forward, will it be more of the same? Or
the next step would be a public hearing with all edits included.
What I'm asking is, have we gone through everything we should go through?
We can go through the rest of the document. But this was considered the priority two, the development issues.
So we've done priority one now?
Priority one is everything else if you have questions on it.
This was all priority two?
Yes.
Is it of equal length to what we've just done?
I do not have slides prepared to walk through the rest of the document.
Well, that says to me that we need two sessions.
The intent was the rest of the document was to be accepted as is, unless there was significant discussion.
Well, priority one are the important mandatory things, right?
Correct.
I would think that we ought to at least gloss through what the important priority things are.
It's challenging. Because the way this, well, why don't we go through this? The jurisdiction means and methods. So this is a more in-depth discussion of what priority one was or part one. This has more to do with the details. So if you were to flip to the back of the document, our old details were very obviously drafted in the 90s. These have all been updated to current format. And these are structured to complement everything in the written text. There are a couple red lines on these pages. And the reason for that is we don't have CAD license software right now, so we're hiring this effort out. If there are any comments that this group had on those details, we could have them redrafted after our discussion. So that was number one. Number two was talking about formalizing the lift station minimum requirements. So we expanded in this document an entire section called, I believe it is, where's my table of contents?
Let me ask the question this way. How many people had comments on the priority one issues?
None. Yeah.
So it's pretty much an accepted form.
The way, it's hard to package a lot of information like this, and even into a couple workshops. So the intent was we focus part one as a priority. It's to be accepted as is unless there are questions or concerns from the development community or the planning commission or the public at large. We haven't received any on those. That's primarily because those were already written. They're just repackaged to be more clear. The priority two, which were all the highlighted topics we just worked through, those are the new ideas. And that's what we wanted the feedback on. Those are the new development regulations which are requiring this public process. So we can go through priority one in as much detail as you'd like, or we don't have to look at it at all.
It just bothers me that we don't talk about the high priority thing.
I probably structured the narrative incorrectly. I should have called the developer issues priority one. Richard?
It strikes me the priority one things are technical, mm-hmm. that the public can provide us information on the stuff we want to need or what we need to know if there are issues that come up. Some of us are sailors, submarine sailors are very used to dealing with pipes and things, so very comfortable with the technical things. I'm not, and I would prefer personally to hear from the public about things that they think, hey, pay attention to this issue, it's, even though it's been listed as priority one. Mm-hmm. So those are my thoughts, Alan.
Just, I know you said there were no comments on priority one. Did, when you talked to KBA, were there comments or any feedback regarding like the update of like the clarity of these standards or the means and measures, or was it just kind of a, this needs to happen? And so what was kind of, I don't know if there's a temperature that you got from KBA.
The temperature, it was well received.
Okay.
This has been a long needed project. We've provided several new diagrams and details, which have been, we've had to talk about on a project-by-project basis.
Yeah.
So we've provided a lot of clarity under Priority 1 to better describe the means and methods that are buried in the 80-some pages of text.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just from my standpoint, as a civil contractor in this county, very much needed. And very much supported on priority one as far as just getting more clarity, more industry standard, things like that, you know, even small things. I know that it's a priority two as far as like backfill material, things like that. But at the same time, those things all matter. And so I think I had a feeling that was KBA's temperature with that, because it just helps everyone just be more effective and cooperative with all stakeholders. So I can appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, our goal is, you know, how to build what we want to inherit. And the intent is that once this is adopted, I have a fresh copy on my desk, and I give a copy to all of our leadership members in our utility, and as they come up with ideas or corrections, because we're not going to get it right, we make those red line edits, and then we come back in 2 to 3 years, depending on what the edits are, and we update that. This becomes a living document, not a doctrine that stays on a shelf for 30 years and we end up not using it as much as we should.
As a person, in personal opinion, I would feel more comfortable if we at least walk through the priority one issues, whether it's done tonight or next week.
I would ask, what format would you like that?
This format's wonderful.
So
what we've done
detail.
Here is, I think, a very nice discussion.
Okay.
But, you know, I've got a whole commission here. Well, we can ask for a vote.
Well, the one comment I wanted to note is that priority one are not changes. Those are the needs yesterday to formalize the current construction practices. So those are not changes that we're proposing. These are elaborations to provide clarity for the development community. What I don't have for you is the previous version that shows how disorganized it was and how this is showing a replacement. The majority of that text under priority one is not changing. It's just more clear than what was previously written. But you want to see examples of that.
Question, comment?
I think if we saw that literally if we just see the difference between the two, I'm not sure you would have to highlight every single item in it, because it sounds like the majority of it changed. Is that what you're saying?
It did.
And then just as a clarification, all of these new or revised details came, they're industry standard or they came from some other normal means and methods concept.
Correct.
Just as a, we're just clarifying that sentence.
Okay. Yeah. I think I can pull it up online just so we can take a quick peek, and then, you know, we can take a vote if, I don't know how we're doing on time, actually.
We're at the 2-hour point now.
Let's see where it is. Another project of ours is updating our website. It's a little clunky. Here we go, connect us. So here is a version of it. Let me navigate back over to the Zoom. So this is what the document used to look like. It was very vague and lacked specific detail. So we took these comments and we incorporated a tremendous amount of specificity from Pierce County, which complemented what we were already requiring. So we talked a little bit about similarity between other jurisdictions. We're trying to meet that goal of being uniform across Kitsap County so that a contractor who works in Bremerton, Poulsbo, the county, Gig Harbor, Tacoma, they know what they're doing. So this document, this is how it was written, a very different format, and as a full disclosure, I don't think it was ever appropriately adopted. So I don't have specific slides or discussion points ready to walk through this. I can do that in a separate workshop format. My hope that it could be accepted because it wasn't introducing new development regulations. These are the means and methods that as a sewer utility we are required to uphold. So it's up to you.
Can I ask a quick clarifying question? That mm-hmm. is now this.
Yes.
So you went from, I can't see.
This is one section.
It's one section. Okay.
Yeah, and it's hard to find all sections.
I thought you went from like 12 pages to 82 pages.
Which was so there's 12 pages. Here's another 8. Mm-hmm. Here's another 15. And we don't have sections 1 and 2 online for some reason. Mm-hmm. So it's something I can come back with if that's a desire of the commission.
Can you pull up the slide, one that says two sessions, one session?
Yes. I can find it.
So the question for the panel is, do we have enough information that we can go to a public hearing next? Or do we want another work study?
Well, I guess if to the extent any of the commissioners feel they need more information to be prepared for the public hearing, I think that we should do another work study.
Another work study?
I think so, mostly because we want to see his revisions, right? That's what you're going to present?
I can present the revisions, which will be pretty simple to do. It's a question of how do you want to walk through the rest of the document? What I provided were the jurisdiction-specific changes that are going to be more focus points for the development community.
Well, what was presented coming into this was that the priority one ones were the mandatory requirements.
Correct.
If there's mandatory requirements and that they've changed, we'd like to see the changes.
Okay.
And I'm trying to answer your question on how would we like that presented, perhaps a matrix, like a table. Do you see what I mean, like a comparison?
I would just like to see the older document, if there's a way that that can be sent to us so we can review what was with what is now would be helpful.
Yes, that's helpful. Thank you.
Because when you just flashed it up on the screen, mm-hmm. if we just took like the general section, mm-hmm. it was 3 bullet points, and now general section is 12 bullet points. Mm-hmm. And so then you highlighted the 3 bullet points out of those 12 bullet points that you felt were actual changes, where the rest is just additional definitions?
Correct.
Okay, so I wanted to have another work session just to look at what we talked about today as well, and then if you could give us the copy, then we could come back if we had any questions.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense?
We agree.
Possibly. To kind of tag on to Adrian, actually, I like all the recommendations. Having this original sent out so it gives us time to review, maybe even allows us time to ask and get questions prepared ahead of time to mm-hmm. make the highest and best use of time. And then either like a matrix like Adrian had recommended, or if you or your staff, or maybe you are your own staff, I'm not sure who's diving into this with you, if there's some notable things that you really did a large expanse on, mm-hmm. maybe 5 to 10 sections in here that you really poured into, expanded, clarified, and that way you can highlight the apples to apples. This is what it was. This is what we turned that particular section or paragraph into. Mm-hmm. And just so we can kind of see what does clarification and expansion really mean to Kitsap County, what's that definition really look like? I think sometimes there's a little bit of fear of saying, we didn't change anything, but we doubled the size of the document. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit, people are a little bit apprehensive of that. But I'm just trying to think of a creative way to not bog you down with 82 pages of doing like a straight across, you know, like sentence by sentence change. I just feel like that would be maybe a little bit unfair and not necessary, but something that would be like the high level things, maybe most notable.
What I can
notable.
Do is we have 13 sections, so I can walk through any notable changes or expansions within those chat sections. Some will have more, and there are some good things of note in there. So that's a helpful outline. It's just I'm happy to come back. It's why we opted for 2 workshops as an option. I just want to make sure that I bring it back in a format that is, you kind of know what you're expecting, just because it's a very technical document. So I can certainly provide come back with summary of revisions. That'll be a pretty quick discussion. And then have another workshop presentation to walk through section by section what some of those notable changes or expansions are.
And just to clarify, you're not looking for input on the on the means and measures?
Is generally, no, it's accepted. Okay. I mean, we can talk about it, but it, for example, when we talk about telemetry equipment, if you want to talk about why we're requiring a NEMA 4X module versus something else, that's not something that I would want the community to impact, because that's a very specialized piece of infrastructure that has to be that way.
Sure. I just wanted to have a little bit of clarity so like our minds are in the right place when we're reviewing the document, that we're looking at overall like ease, understanding, and clarity for the community at large.
I can provide an intro summary as well, just to kind of reframe that, because I'm sure you'll have many other things on your mind before you take a look at that document again.
Everybody votes for 2?
2.
Okay. Yes.
Do you
go ahead.
I vote yes.
Oh, you're voting yes.
Just as clarify, and not trying to give input at all on details and technical, but all the red lines in the details, are those things that still need to be implemented?
I just haven't had our consultant update them because they're very expensive.
Yeah. Okay. Where were those recommendations for the detail updates coming from? Was that KBA or from?
That was internal primarily.
Okay.
We didn't receive any comments on the details from the community.
Perfect.
We're willing to accept more if anyone's interested in providing more commentary.
I don't know. Just curiosity. Thank you.
Of course.
Anything else further tonight?
No. I want to thank you all for sitting through a very technical discussion and the really thoughtful feedback. It's very helpful. We want to make sure that this document can be read by a different variety of citizens and contractors. So I appreciate the candid conversation.
Okay.
Okay.
This closes work study session one. Which brings us to general public comment period number two. Do we have any comments from the outside? Anybody online have a comment? Two? Want to start with Cindy? Ms. Alpress?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. How much time do I have?
Stock. Let us hear what you want.
Okay. I just wanted to remind everybody, I don't know if you know, but we, about a week ago, the citizens of Central Kitsap submitted a petition to the commissioners to make an emergency declaration to pause approvals and permitting on future phases of the Royal Valley development. Until such time, the Kitsap County and Washington State Department of Transportation can provide solutions to address the lack of infrastructure in accommodating recent and expected population growth. We would appreciate a follow-up from that. We have, I have asked for a follow-up on it, and I've also sent the petition information to our elected officials, as in Greg Nance and Drew Hansen and the commissioners. And we would like to know if this is what the status is there. Have not heard from any of those.
Have you submitted anything to the Planning Commission?
No, that's what I'm doing tonight.
Okay. Please submit your comments and your recommendations to the Planning Commission so that we all can have a chance to read them and think about it.
Okay, and I wanted to also bring up the, you know, I appreciate the focus on the Year of the Rural, because this is exactly what has happened here, is the DCD's out of control approval of all these developments here. And our biggest concern right now is not only the infrastructure, which includes traffic, emergency services, law enforcement, schools, and hospital, but we are all on private wells surrounding this development. They've put that development in the middle of rural residential. They've zoned that 6 or 8 years ago, urban cluster. They put an urban cluster right in the middle of a Central Valley.
Yes, ma'am. Now, please put it in writing and please send it.
Okay, will do. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your comments. Thomas Garrett? Mr. Garrett?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I'm just interested to find out if the county subscribes to the Call Before You Dig program. In other words, if somebody was going to, a contractor was hired to go out and dig up a site, and you had a sewer line out there, would you get notified through that 811 system?
This is Anthony with the sewer utility. Yes, we get those locate requests often. That's one of the primary job responsibilities of two of my inspectors. So we are in the field providing paint on the ground and responding to those calls as required by the dig laws.
Okay, very good. That was the only question I had. Thanks.
Thank you, Thomas. Any comments from the room? Seeing none, I'll close the second general comment period. Any comments from the board for the good of the order? Other than welcome.
Yeah, just a formal welcome to our newest commissioners. It's great to have you. Thank you.
And we're glad you feel free to talk.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to comment that there are permit applications for Royal Valley in play. And so we've got to be very careful about how we manage change to what are considered vested applications. DCD is in and the county is in receipt of the petition, and we are working on a response. So I just want to caution that the Planning Commission's role, other than to be aware, might be rather limited.
Yes, sir. I understand. I just want to get her on the record rather than listen to the next hour.
Absolutely. I'm just pointing out that there might not be an action required by Planning Commission.
Okay. For the good of the order, on Thursday at 7 o'clock, Thursday the 7th at 5 to 7 o'clock, the Navy is presenting their program plan for, proposed program plan for the shipyard overhaul. It's a multi-year, like 10 or 20-year program. This is first step in that direction with the environmental impact statement. It will be at Bremerton, Marvin Williams Hall, 5 to 7, Thursday the 7th. If you're interested in what the Navy's proposing doing, that's a good meeting to go to, listen, and make comments. Any other comments for the good of the order?
I have one for the good of the order. Along that same vein, on Saturday, August 9th, from 2 to 6 p.m., there is a community event. It's called Kick It with Kitsop. It's a community event that's focused around community health and wellness and togetherness. It's a farmer's market feel with live music, food, all local vendors local to Kitsop County. So we would love to see all of you there, as well as everyone with the public. It's open to all. Thank you.
Where?
Thank you, Mr. Beam. It is at the Town Square Mall here in Port Orchard. It's if anyone's familiar, there's a Goodwill. The Rack is right there. It's one of the local gyms. And then it's in the parking lot right to the side. You'll see a lot of balloons and things on the road that day. So we'd love to see everyone there.
Okay. Anybody else? Hearing no further, meeting adjourned. Thank you.